Now, did you head from that tiny high school back to Luther? Is that, or is there another step in the chain?
My, you're certainly asking the right questions, Greg. I decided that I would quit teaching and go back to school and get my master's degree, and so I chose the University of Michigan. Went out there, was enrolled in my third summer school, and got my apartment, got a roommate and everything. This offer came from Luther to teach for 1 year for the replacement of the man who had suddenly, his wife had gotten a job at New York City Center Opera. And so here I was offered this place to teach. And I went around and asked every single teacher what I should do. What do you think they said, yes or no? Yes to go or no not to go? What do you think they said?
Oh, that's a good question. Depends on how generous of spirit they were.
Every single one of them said no. Stay here.
Yeah, I would think it would have been hard to let you go, and they probably were fearful for you, too.
Yeah. Then on Friday afternoon, I had a piano lesson, and I asked my piano teacher. She said, what's your goal in life? I said, I want to teach in college. Well, for goodness sakes, take this job, get it on your record, and be ahead of everybody else. Huh. Man, I ran so fast for that phone to call Luther and say, I'll come for a year. And, of course, I like to think, boy, was it a long year.
Over half a century you were there.
Yeah, 57 years.
What did it feel like to be back on that campus not all that long after you had been a student there? And of course, you're not the first person in history to go through that, but I should think that would have been interesting.
It was interesting because in the first choir I had at Luther, the first Nordic choir I had at least a half a dozen GIs, you know, and they were practically my same age.
Mm.
But somehow they showed me the right respect and things moved along.
If we would compare the way you conducted choirs and led rehearsals and interacted with students, is the Weston Noble of 1948 profoundly different from the Weston Noble of 2007, or at least in the most essential ways, were you very much the same person then as you are now?
That's quite a question. I can answer it one way, in this manner. At about my third year at Luther, I was asked to lecture on any topic I wanted to the State Convention of the Wisconsin Music Educators. So I chose the topic of the psychology that's involved in having a good rehearsal. What right psychological steps can contribute to a fine rehearsal? And Greg, to this day, I go back to that lecture that I wrote.
Huh.
So, and then that, I have not changed. I'm sure that I'm much more academic now, so to speak. I have much more knowledge, and I'm probably not quite as wild, so to speak, you know, in my emotional outbursts and so forth. But the kernel part of it was there. It was just letting the plant grow.
Hmm.
Yeah,
I have to say that one of the things that, and I've told you this before, that one of the things that has so impressed me among many things this year in playing for the choir and seeing you every day in rehearsal is the fact that the essentials are all what I remember exactly at Luther, and yet many of the specifics are different, that since I graduated from Luther in 1982, you do different warm-ups, many of them than we ever did, and you talk about certain principles with different kinds of images than you did back then, and that clearly over these last 25 years, you have still been learning and growing, and I don't think everybody lives life that way. I think some people get to a place and achieve a certain status, and probably pretty much stop learning and growing. And clearly at some point you made a decision that that was not going to be you, that you were going to continue to learn.
I guess Mother Nature has something to do with that, but that's true. And my goal is to take whatever principles we have to use to be successful and make them as simple as possible so that the average singer can understand what we're talking about and not be way up in some stratosphere, you know, but be, and use illustrations that are very easy to understand. That's my goal, to keep simplifying what I do.
I sometimes think of what people would think who are not really involved in music or choirs, if they would sit in on a rehearsal and would hear some of the images that you like to use, trying to think of some of the most famous. I mean, like you might talk about, oh, don't hit that note so hard. You need to sing it like you're stroking the back of a cat.
Yeah. Or don't drag in mud on your mother's carpet. Now, what does that have to do with singing?
Exactly. Or you need to sing this phrase like you're a Cadillac driving through whipped cream. I remember that. So the interesting pictures we use. And clearly, you think something happens when you use images and language in that way that is sort of beyond the basic.
Yeah, because, you see, the basic is out of our mind, right? I mean, there's certain basic principles. But if you're going to bring them into being, and this is true in teaching literature too, if you're going to bring them into being, you have to use the gift of imagination so that each one of them imagines, oh, this is supposed to be sung like a ballet dancer and not an elephant or something like that. Or if you want something that's very broad and stately, come on, can't you just imagine Prince Philip and Queen Elizabeth coming down the aisle to get married in Westminster Chapel? You know? And then their imagination kicks in. And what color would you use for the tone that I'm
making? Yeah, you like to ask that a lot. In fact, we should maybe talk about that for a second, the fact that in a rehearsal, and this is something that I certainly have done, as so many of your proteges have over the years, is that you really spend a lot of time in rehearsal asking the choir members questions.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us why you think that's important and what is gained.
If the director is primarily teaches through facts and requests and so forth, the average student forgets 75%. So any teacher teaching any academic sample, if the teacher takes the initiative of always leading, the students forget 75% of it.
Mm.
But if you hook in the imagination, that percentage drops drastically. Because each student then has taken ownership of what a poem is supposed to say. Or what is this line of the poem? Or why this incident in the story? If they're reading a story, if they can picture it in their minds, they begin to own it. And I like to say, now pretend that you're a set designer in New York and you're going to stage this. Now, how many people are on stage? You know, what's the lighting on stage? What's the color of the clothes and so forth? And we get a common emotional response to a fact. Mm. That's what it is.
And taking it beyond the facts is part of
the whole
point.
Then taking it beyond the fact. That's right.
Now, I'm glad this question is occurring to me. I think I would regret it if I hadn't asked this. For many years, you were not only the director of the Nordic Choir at Luther, but also the director of the bands. In fact, mm-hmm. people are always surprised when they hear that when I grew up in Decorah and would often be taken to music concerts at Luther as a youngster, 10, 11, 12 years old, sometimes dropped off, you know, to be there all by myself. What I remember most vividly of you is in front of the band. The band concerts made a tremendous impact on me, and I never blew into an instrument as long as I lived, but those were very powerful experiences for me. Now, some of what we've described and what I know of you as a director, of course, of choirs, do you do the same thing in band rehearsals? And are you thinking about the same kinds of things, like engaging imagination?
Yes. Oh, I surely do. What does this remind you of? Or is this a soldier marching down the street? Or is it a ballerina, you know, or something? Just, no, I use a great deal of that. In some ways, even more. Because the band doesn't have a text.
Right. It's so funny for you to say that, because I guess because there's no text, I was sort of imagining you not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
right.
You're saying just the opposite, that because there's no text, because you're not singing some song of the angels, you're playing some piece of music with no text,
right.
It becomes even more crucial to do that.
Now, and that takes me to one more thing. A band has to play with emotion. Now, most bands don't play with emotion, especially if they're marching bands and so on and so forth. Now, I'm a band director now, remember that. And choirs are apt to not sing without emotion. They'll be schooled to do the technique. Well, how does one get emotion into the tone in performance, regardless of the medium? And the only way that you get emotion in the tone is through the gift of imagination. And that's got one of God's special gifts to us. That's what separates us from animals, for example, that we have that gift of imagination. And when the computer can't pick it up anymore when it's in the realm of imagination, this is something that cannot be a stereotype. But that is when things become alive and you own it personally in your spirit. And then you relate to it when you're performing it. It's just that simple.
Mm. Well, and that kind of experience stays with you. I mean, for as long as
absolutely.
You live.
Absolutely. You'll forget the fact, won't you? You'll forget the fact.
Most of them.
But you won't forget the effect of the fact.
Right.
Which comes out in the imagination.
Yeah.